नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the fifth canto, chapter 26, text number 2. And I'll read till text number 6, because that's the one that has a purport. Well, fifth one has a purport, but it's very short. So I'll just read the Sanskrit and the translations. Rishirvacha trigunatvat karta sradaya karma gataya pratagvita sarva eva sarvasya tada tamyena bhavanti. Translation. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami said, "My dear king, in this material world there are three kinds of activities, those in the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Because all people are influenced by the three modes of material nature, the results of their activities are also divided into three. One who acts in the mode of goodness is religious and happy. One who acts in passion achieves mixed misery and happiness. And one who acts under the influence of ignorance is always unhappy and lives like an animal. Because of the varying degrees to which the living entities are influenced by the different modes of nature, their destinations are also of different varieties." Text number 3. Ate danim pratisida lakshanayas lakshanasya dharmasya tataiva kartu shradaya vaishadrishat karma phalam visadrisham bhavati yahi anadi avijaya krita kamanam tatparinama lakshana shritaya sahasrasaha pravitastasam prachurena nuvarna yishyamaha. Just as by executing various pious activities, one achieves different positions in heavenly life, and by acting impiously, one achieves different positions in hellish life. Those who are activated by the material mode of ignorance engage in impious activities. And according to the extent of their ignorance, they are placed in different grades of hellish life. If one acts in the mode of ignorance because of madness, his resulting misery is the least severe. One who acts impiously but knows the distinction between pious and impious activities is placed in a hell of intermediate severity. And for one who acts impiously and ignorantly because of atheism, the result in hellish life is the worst. Because of ignorance, every living entity has been carried by various desires into thousands of different hellish planets since time immemorial. I shall try to describe them as far as possible. That's interesting. Because of ignorance, every living entity has been carried by various desires into thousands of different hellish planets since time immemorial. That's how powerful the desires are. Text number 4. Rajuvacha Naraka nama bhagavan kim desha visesha atava bahistriloka ahosvid antarala iti. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, "My dear Lord, are the hellish regions outside the universe, within the covering of the universe, or in different places on this planet?" Text number 5. Rishir uvacha atarala eva tri jagatyas tu dishi dakshinasyam adhasatad bhumir aparishtachcha jaladyasyam agnis Vatadaya Piturganadishi Swanam Gotranam Paramena Samadina Satta Ivasisha Asasana Nivasanti. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami answered, all the hellish planets are situated in their intermediate space between the three worlds and the Garbhodak ocean. They lie on the southern side of the universe beneath Bhu Mandala and slightly above the water of the Garbhodak ocean. Pitriloka is also located in this region between the Garbhodak ocean and the lower planetary systems. All the residents of Pitriloka, headed by Agni Svata, meditate in great samadhi on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always wish their families well. Purport. As previously explained, below our planetary system are seven lower planetary systems, the lowest of which is called Pataloka. Beneath Pataloka are other planets known as Naraloka, or the hellish planets. At the bottom of the universe lies the Garbhodak ocean. Therefore, the hellish planets lie between Pataloka and the Garbhodak ocean. So, text number 6. Yatraha vava bhagavan pitrirajo vivasvata svavasayam prapiteshu svapurusharjan tushu samparteshu yata karma vadyam dosham evanu langita bhagavach chasanaha sagano damam daryayati. The king of the Pitas is Yamaraj, the very powerful son of the sun god. He resides in Pitriloka with his personal assistants and, while abiding by the rules and regulations set down by the Supreme Lord, has his agents, the Yamadutas, bring all sinful men to him immediately upon their death. After bringing them within his jurisdiction, he properly judges them according to their specific sinful activities and sends them to one of the many, many hellish planets for suitable punishments. Purport. Yamaraj is not a fictitious or mythological character. He has his own abode, Pitriloka, of which he is king. Agnostics may not believe in hell, but Sukadeva Goswami affirms the existence of the Naraka planets, which lie between the Garbhodak ocean and Pataloka. Yamaraj is appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to see that all human beings do not violate his rules and regulations, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4:17. Karmanohi api bodhyavam bodhavyam cha vikarmana akarmanascha bodhavyam gahana karmano gati. The intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should know properly what action is, what forbidden action is, and what inaction is. One should understand the nature of karma, vikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. This is the law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conditioned souls who have come to this material world for sense gratification are allowed to enjoy their senses under certain regulative principles. If they violate these regulations, they are judged and punished by Yamaraj. He brings them to the hellish planets and properly chastises them to bring them back to Krishna consciousness. By the influence of Maya, however, the conditioned souls remain infatuated with the mode of ignorance. Thus, in spite of repeated punishments by Yamaraj, they do not come to their senses, but continue to live within the material condition, committing sinful activities again and again. Om Gyanat Marandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus unmilitamena tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitamena Bhutale Swayam Upagadamayam Dadanti Swabhadantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Panchakopa Tubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So, this is a great narration between a disciple and a spiritual master. And the disciple is becoming enlightened, his consciousness is becoming more and more aware. And this is a very, very powerful thing. Actually, awareness is probably one of the most powerful things. And what is he becoming aware of? And basically, it's for our awareness, because Sukadeva Goswami is a pure devotee. He's pretty much aware of these things, but out of compassion for us, his narrating is asking these questions so that we can become enlightened. So this is a powerful thing to become aware. And he's been taking a tour from all the different planetary systems, the heavenly planets, the earthly planets, and now he's going and showing and describing the hellish planets. And so you get a broad vision of what's going on. It's like you're stepping back and you just look at everything that's within the universe. And for us, we can see, wow, this is what's available in this universe. And according to your desires and your activities, you can decide to go to any of these places. But the thing is, once you decide, or once you act in a certain way, it's inevitable that these destinations you will get. So there's inevitable failure and there's inevitable success. So we get to decide. But once you take that leap, then it can't be stopped. You end up in these places. So it's up to us, before we leave this body, before we die, to actually be in a state of particular consciousness, or be in a state of, you know, whatever you want to attain, that you will be thinking of that. So this is a great Vaishnava is hearing this narration from his spiritual master. He had 7 days to live. So he was very anxious to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he hurriedly narrated the entire Bhagavatam in 7 days. Nowadays, people try to imitate this. They call this what they call the Bhagavata Saptaha or something. They try to imitate this by professional reciters. But Prabhupada said, this is not necessary. This is not proper. Actually, Bhagavatam should be read daily. Every day. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Because by regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that's troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And then loving service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose praise of transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. So it's irrevocable fact. Even though we may not have a taste for hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis, this is actually the remedy, is that we have to hear it. Just like one who's diseased with jaundice, and sugar candy tastes bitter. He may not like it, but that's the cure. Just give him sugar candy, and Prabhupada says also papaya is good. So if you take this remedy, then gradually your taste for this will come back, and you'll be cured. So here, Sukadeva Goswami is assured at least 7 days he's going to live. We're not assured we're going to live. Excuse me? Oh, I'm sorry. Parikshit Maharaj is assured, you know, at least 7 days he's going to survive. So he's taking advantage of those 7 days. But we're not assured of 7 seconds, 7 minutes. So even more, we should be constantly hearing and reading these transcendental literatures. But yet he's about to leave this body and is hearing about all these hellish planets. Actually, Parikshit Maharaj was a great king. He had no problems in life, actually. He was very satisfied. He had a wonderful kingdom. You know, what does he want? But he knew that there was something more to life, so he wanted to find out from a spiritual master what we should do. So for a devotee, there's actually no problem. But when Parikshit Maharaj heard of the hellish condition of these living entities on these hellish planets, he became very sorry. He wasn't very happy about this. And he was concerned about the living entities. So he wanted to find out from his spiritual master then, how can they become, you know, free from this suffering? And this is the Vaishnava's attitude. He's very compassionate for suffering living entities, even though he himself has no problems. That's his only so-called problem, is that, you know, to see the suffering. That's his suffering, is to see the suffering of other people and be compassionate for that. What do they call it? Para-dukhi-dukhi. So even we could see in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a very beautiful, he didn't have any problems. He was very influential. He was learned. You know, he was very affectionate. He had a very affectionate mother. He had very beautiful two wives. You know, Lakshmi Priya, Vishnu Priya. He was so happy that even the demigods, they could never expect to experience the happiness that Lord Chaitanya did. But yet, what did Lord Chaitanya do? He gave it all up. Why? Just to show mercy to the fallen conditioned souls suffering in the mature world. And then if you look at also the Goswami's lives, they gave up their exalted posts. Chief ministers, one of them was, of the government. And what did he do? He became a mendicant and just wore a loincloth and had just a water pot. Why? To show mercy to the suffering humanity. So that's a Vaishnava. He may be completely satisfied with Krishna. He's not unhappy. But his unhappiness is the unhappiness of the conditioned soul suffering in this mature world. And if you look at all the different lives throughout saintly people, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj also said the same thing. He was just concerned about the fools suffering in the mature world. And even Lord Jesus Christ, he agreed to suffer for, you know, his disciples. But his so-called followers thought, well, let Jesus Christ suffer for us. We love him that way. And we could go on and do our sinful activities. But Prabhupada said this is not the proper mentality. They should be sane. And they should say, why should I cause suffering for my teacher, for my spiritual master? I should stop this nonsense. You know, it's like the father, you know, he's a very wealthy person, and then he has a rascal son who commits murder. And then the son thinks he's caught, and he thinks, don't worry, my father, he loves me. He'll suffer for me. He'll die for me. He'll be hanged. But no, that's not how it works. Is that you sin, you suffer. You kill someone, you have to be killed. So that's the law. So these are what we have. We have very severe and strict and exact laws. And Parikshit Maharaj could see this, the inevitability of the conditioned souls to suffer due to their nonsense activities. So he wanted to know how they could become delivered from this hellish life. But the foolish modern civilization, they think that they're independent from these laws. You know, they may hear about hell, or they may have some kind of feeling that they're going to suffer for their activities. So they just kind of like write it off and say, oh, I don't believe that. As if because they don't believe it, that it's not inevitable that they're going to have some reaction for their activities. So this is the feature of modern civilization. They don't believe in the next life. They think that this is all there is, so might as well enjoy. But this is not a fact. If you live a life of irresponsibility, then you suffer. They say that if you live simply, then, no, if you live easy life, then your life is very difficult. But if you live an austere life, then your life is very simple. Your life is very easy. So this is the wealth of the Brahmanas. They love austerities. But this hellish region, it's not meant for everyone. You know, most of the living entities, there's 8,400,000 species. 8 million species are in the lower kingdom, animals, plants, insects. They don't have to suffer in hellish life for their activities because they're animals. They don't have intelligence. And there's 400,000 species of human beings, and not all of them have to go to hell, because the ones that are following the Vedic instructions, living according to the Vedic instructions given by Krishna, they don't have to experience this hell. But it's only those who avoid the Vedic instructions that will suffer. So Maharaj Pariksit is very anxious to find out how these conditioned souls can be delivered from this hellish life. So Sukadeva Goswami answers that sinful activities must be atoned in three ways you can atone for your sins. One is by karma, jnana, or bhakti. So yoga is included in these. But karma kanda, we may work very hard, you know, struggle to really go up to the heavenly planets, to avoid the hellish planets, or to get some better situation. But the thing with karma is that you may be very careful, but unknowingly you're committing sinful activities. Just walking down the street, you're killing so many living entities. So there's a reaction for that. So it's not very perfect. It's still, there's discrepancies in the karmakanda way of atoning. So it's a great risk. And then jnanakanda, you try to understand things properly, but you know, you have a knowledge about what you should do, what you can't do. But Srila Prabhupada said it's just simply speculation if you don't know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you have no knowledge of Krishna, then there's great risk. So only the bhakti marga is the way, the real secure, the way we can actually become free from these reactions and be protected from suffering in these hellish lives. Because the three modes of material nature, you know, we're contaminated and we engage the senses. Prabhupada explains that the senses means lust, anger, greed, illusion, you know, madness, all these different enemies. That's actually what the material senses, that's what they do. That's what it means. So we have to become free from these activities. And there's a certain setup that's set up by Srila Prabhupada. He's given us a particular activities of how we can have inevitable success. You know, they say that, you know, what's the symptom? You know, there's a symptom, we have disease or we have so many different things. But they say, don't treat the symptom, but change the system. You see, so what is it that we're doing? What activities are we performing? How are we living? Then you change the activities. You change the systematic way that you're doing things. And then you could become pure. You can change. But we have to make it a habit. Habit, they say, is like second nature. And if you don't make it a habit, it's described that then you don't have it. Right? So we've been given certain activities, a certain style, a certain process to engage in to make it inevitable for us to become successful. And it's given to us. If you read, you know, the transcendental literatures, Bhagavad Gita, there's the one, Mam Chayo Vya Bichanena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samitaitan Brahma Bhuye Kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, Prabhupada says, without stoppage, then at once you transcend the modes of material nature, and then you come to the level of Brahman. And this is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement. Srila Prabhupada said, we should give everyone a chance on how to serve Krishna. And then they'll remain on the upper platform, the transcendental platform, free from these material qualities. And those persons, they're not meant for going to hell. In fact, the devotees, it's described that even in dreams, they don't experience hellish life. Such is the guarantee that we have if we always engage in devotional service. But hell is only meant for those who are under the modes of material nature. Even Yamaraj himself says, just bring to me for punishment only those persons who are averse to drinking the honey of the Lord's lotus feet and who do not associate with devotees and who are attached to family life and material enjoyment as all in all. Bring those persons whose tongues do not chant the holy name of the Lord, whose hearts do not even once remember the lotus feet of Krishna, and whose heads have never bowed down before the Lord. Please bring all such fools and rascals. But the devotees, you know, they're very rare. They're pure. They can uproot the weeds of sinful life, you see, in such a way that they never revive again. And that's accomplished by devotional service. Just as the analogy of the sun, it dissipates the rays, the fog, the dense fog by its very powerful rays. The path followed by pure devotees who are well-behaved and fully endowed with the best qualifications is certainly the most auspicious path in this material world. It's free from fear, and it's authorized by the Shastras. So it's fearless because success is guaranteed. So we should think, we should actually see how we have this great power also of, it's described, awareness is like the greatest powerful thing that we can have. But also the most, another thing that we can have, that we do have, is willpower. So with this awareness, and we have this, which is a very miraculous state actually, where you can become aware of your position, aware of, you know, future, you can see the past, you know, the present, like that. But we have this rarest precious energy also, which is willpower, to actually control oneself according to one's desires. So we should think the process of how we can change our bad habits into good habits. And it's very difficult sometimes. It says that when it takes like 30 days, they say sometimes, some people say different times, but to acquire a new habit. And the first 10 days or the beginning is like very difficult. It's like defying gravity. Just like they have the space shuttle. It says 87% of the fuel of that space shuttle is used in the first 2 minutes just to overcome gravity. So that's what a new routine is like, to change our habits in such a way. It's very difficult to overcome resistance. But then you become acclimatized to these things. So we should think, what do we do with our awareness and our willpower? How do we focus it on these transcendental routines, these transcendental activities, you know, that we have in Krishna consciousness, so that we can escape the forces of the modes of material nature, which are like gravity? They force you and they make it inevitable for you to attain certain results of failure or success. Prabhupada has set up such an ideal environment that we could get maximum result. We can achieve great inspiration, great advancement, you know, by coming to the temple every day, bowing to the deities, you know, serving the deities, bathing the deities, chanting, you know, different services throughout the day. He made such an environment so that somehow or another, 24 hours a day, we can be involved in Krishna consciousness like that. So there's certain symptoms we can see. You know, we should see, how should I walk? How should I speak? So many things. Even Arjuna asked, you know, how does a man of whose consciousness is merged in transcendence. How does he walk? How does he speak? What's his language? You know, how does he sit? How does he walk? So there's symptoms for each and every man in terms of his particular situation. So similarly, one in Krishna consciousness has his particular nature of walking, talking, thinking, feeling, all these different things. But most important, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse, is how the man in Krishna consciousness speaks. For speech is the most important quality of any man. It is said that a fool is undiscovered as long as he does not speak. And certainly a well-dressed fool cannot be identified unless he speaks. But as soon as he speaks, he reveals himself at once. The immediate symptom of a Krishna conscious man is that he speaks only of Krishna and of matters relating to him. And then all the other symptoms automatically follow. And we could study those symptoms. It's nice to know that's in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, starting with text number 55. And all the symptoms are described there. Might be good to review. So we should see how our life is aligned in such a way that we are involved in Krishna consciousness. So here's a nice activity I think we should all do. Just everyone can think for a minute, and if you have some paper, you could write down, you know, and you could do this in your mind, or you could do it later. It's kind of a nice practice to think of the five most important things in your life, or the five things that are most important to you in life. Just think of those, or you could write them down. Five most important things in life. Okay, you could, if you write it down on a list, and then one column, and then the other column, you could write down. So what are the five activities that you spend most of your time doing? So you got two lists. You got one list, the five most important things in your life, and then another list. What are the five activities you spend most of your time doing? So now if you compare these two lists, you can see whether they're in alignment or not. You know, someone may think, oh, the most important thing in life, you know, is to become, you know, like say someone wants to become a lawyer or a doctor or something. So he should go into school and study. But no, what does he spend most of his activities doing? You know, playing games or, you know, just associating, wasting time, doing so many things like that. So we have to see. But we've been given the most important things in Krishna consciousness. There's five most important activities that we should engage in. And what are they? Does anyone know what they are? Can you give me one? Excuse me? That's two. Right? One more. There's five? Did you say living in a holy place? Okay, I didn't hear you very well. Yeah, so these are the five most important activities. Associating with devotees, chanting the holy names of the Lord, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, to live in a holy place such as Mathura, Vrindavan, New Dwarka, New Govardhan, you know, to serve the deity with great devotion. So these are given to us by the Goswamis, whose only concern is the suffering of the conditioned souls. So just now analyze, what are the five activities that we spend most of our time doing? Do we associate with devotees? Are we chanting constantly? Do we read the Srimad Bhagavatam? Do we have a regular, every day are we reading Srimad Bhagavatam? Every single day. Srila Prabhupada said we have to read it daily. Where do we live? Maybe physically and body, but where is your mind at most of the time? Where are you living? You know? And do we have a regular program to serve the deity? You know, are you developing a loving relationship with the deity? Regular service? It doesn't matter what kind of service you're doing for the deity. Even the gardener, Srila Prabhupada said, is as good as the pujari. And even it's because it's transcendental. You're in the spiritual world. He said even an ant, if you throw a flower at the deity's feet and there's an ant on the flower, and the ant, you know, touches the feet of the deity, kisses the feet of the deity, that ant is just as good as the pujari, Srila Prabhupada said. So this is the powerful activities that we have here. We don't realize how powerful these activities are. By engaging in them, it's inevitable that you will become successful. But where do we spend most of our time? So we have to align ourselves with the proper activities to get us to the proper result that we want. Because it's inevitable. From whatever you do, it's inevitable there's going to be a reaction, because these are exact laws of nature. And this is what we're learning in the Bhagavatam. So I'd like to stop there and see if anybody has any questions or comments. Yes, Matatva. Oh, there's a mic coming for you. So everybody could hear you on the internet.
In which of the five categories does answering the BBT phone fall into?
Which of the five categories? Associating with devotees, waiting for you to call.
Actually, I was thinking of one thing, that when you spoke about the justice, karmic justice, that on one level we appreciate justice, and when right. we feel, probably one of the things that hurts the most is when we're treated unjustly. We just demand that justice. I mean, somebody, police, somebody, someone, come on, please help me. Justice, I want it.
Right.
But then we don't take it all the way. We don't take the justice all the way. In other words, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect. You know, you demand justice on one level, but then if you extrapolate the same system, the system of justice, to a greater level, like, you know,
right.
You know, cheating a devotee, you know,
yeah.
you know, stealing some money maybe from a
right.
devotee, or anything.
Even killing animals.
Killing, that's really gross. But,
yeah.
you know, even fine things, you know, then we all of a sudden forget about the justice, you know.
Right.
And we think there is no justice.
Yeah.
Or we might think that there's no one to administer the justice. But if you
True.
Think if there's no one there to administer the justice, that means there is no justice in the universe. It's just an artificial human creation. Yet our hearts long for justice, one of the
right.
most intense longings.
Yeah, Prabhupada also said that someone may be getting, you know, attacked in the middle of the street, or and then people just watch. Then nobody will do anything. You know, nobody will stand up for justice or like that. That's how lazy people are getting. So so that's what they think. They think that, you know, no matter what I do, if I don't believe in something, I'm not going to get a reaction for it. So that's very
yeah. Or you can see in the corporate world, you know, they'll sell a drug. Like just a few years ago, this German company that sells drugs, pharmaceuticals. They made a product that was banned in Europe because it was, I forget what the side effects were, something severe, like life-threatening,
yeah.
that kind of thing. And then they, nevertheless, they didn't, you know, that didn't dampen their enthusiasm to sell the thing. So they tried over in the States and, you know, were selling it for years before it was taken. And then, you know, the lawsuits, but they figured out.
Yeah.
Who cares, the lawsuits, you know, we'll just, at the end, by the time we get busted and convicted, we're going to have sold so many of these products and we'll have made so much money, much more than we're going to pay the lawsuits. That means such a person does not believe there is such a thing as justice, but yet internally is demanding it.
Yeah, demons.
Huge disconnect.
Demons, you know.
Yeah.
What do you say? Their activities are meant to destroy the world.
Yeah. This is, you know, emotional sickness to the utmost.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Yes, Mukunda Prabhu.
This is kind of related to Mahatattva Prabhu's question or comment. And I was just seeing that here, it states, Srila Prabhupada states in his expanded translation of text 3 that if one acts in the mode of ignorance because of madness, his resulting misery is the least severe. One who acts impiously but knows the distinction between pious and impious activities is placed in a hell of intermediate severity. And for one who acts impiously and ignorantly because of atheism, the resultant hellish life is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Now we understand that the judge of these three is Yamaraj. That's stated in the following verses.
Right.
And it seems like in the purport to text 6, Prabhupada acknowledges that the intricacies of action are very hard to understand. Therefore, one should understand the nature of karma, vikarma, and akarma, and one must act accordingly. How do we do that?
Okay, this is what we're in the process of learning right now by hearing the narration of this great devotee, Maharaj Parikshit, and the great spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami. So by constantly hearing about the transcendental activities of Krishna and amongst the devotees, we actually learn what proper action is, what forbidden action is, you know, what inaction is. By examples that have came before, we can learn from the failures of other personalities throughout the Bhagavatam and from successes also. So we're learning. It's a process of learning. And Prabhupada says we cannot, how does he put it, give up sinful activities or control the senses or understand these things properly without the association of devotees. That's why it's one of the most powerful activities, the five most important things that we should be doing, is when you're in association of devotees, then it becomes easier. You know, it's very difficult outside of devotion. Is, does that sound right? Thank you. Yes, Mahatattva?
Prabhupada says in a few places in the Gita that to understand karma, akarma, and vikarma is very difficult, and therefore one should have a spiritual master. And we know in Vedic culture that's a beginning of a civilized life when one takes initiation from a spiritual master. In other words, one has to have a guidance of an experienced devotee.
Right. Yeah, that's the association.
Otherwise, one's barely human.
Any other comments? So Prabhupada writes in the purport to that verse that the entire Bhagavad Gita is directed toward this conclusion of that one has to learn, yeah. To understand all this, one has to associate with authorities in Krishna consciousness and learn the secret from them. This is as good as learning from the Lord directly. Otherwise, even the most intelligent persons will be bewildered. Probably in the purport there. Yes, Mukundadatta.
People in general in this mature world, the general tenor of modern society is more or less atheistic, and people, I don't want to say justify that by pointing out that, you know, the standards of judgment that are visible within our society are all relative. But I would like to point out that even in the society of devotees, we have different standards and different opinions. And so it sometimes it becomes a little bit hard to deal with that. So maybe you can comment on that.
There's a double standard? Is that what you're saying? No. Yeah, there's... Well, there's time, place, and circumstance. And just like certain temples in different cultures, they have different standards than the American temples. You know. And the details may differ, but the principles always remain the same. So it's time, place, and circumstance. Yeah. As far as deviations, if it's, it, you know, that's what I'm saying. Principles must be there, but things may be a little different. Yes, maybe. I think. All right. So Amala Bhakta then.
Regarding the previous statement, we just like to add that the standard of the devotees should be that whatever we think, whatever we do, and even whatever we feel should be in line with the principles of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
Exactly.
However, if the standard of feeling, willing, and thinking is based on capriciousness or willfulness, which is deviated from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, those should be avoided. And if we do engage in that, and we realize that we do, then we should try to overcome it and make sure that we are in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That is our standard. And anything outside of that is considered inappropriate.
Jai, thank you. That's the real alignment. Okay, Prabhu. Yeah, go ahead. So you don't want to give us your realization? We want to hear your, get some mercy. From Bhanu Bhatta Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. Amala Bhakta pretty much summed up what I was going to say, except that just the point that Prabhupada makes, the point that regulated life is what separates devotional life and or civilized life
from
and the life of uncivilized persons.
Right.
And the ultimate regulative principle is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. And so all the other regulations within Bhakti Yoga are surrounded around that. So when one gets to the point of actually loving Krishna and shows the symptoms of one who's on that standard, then naturally, just like water naturally flows downhill, so similarly, you know, we can understand things in terms of, you know, right and wrong, so many things based on that level of devotional service, and therefore, you know, we should try to associate with more advanced devotees and then understand what the standard is from them.
Yeah, because, you know, what Yamaraj said, bring those persons whose tongues do not chant the holy names of the Lord, whose hearts do not even once remember the lotus feet of Krishna. Just bring them to me. So, all right, thank you very much for your kind attention. I'll go to Srimad Bhagavatam.